All of these publications now have these daily e-blasts. I've had a lot of clients that we've been able to get really things that traditionally would have been marginally newsworthy.
Okay.
We've been able to get into those email news blasts and they get responses.
All right, it's time for another episode of Grow the Dream. Today,
would you be violating federal labor laws with your social media policy?
And not even know it?
And not even know it.
Boy, we got a lot of stories today. Apple versus the FBI. Is this about publicity and public opinion?
And more Chipotle public relations disasters.
Ooh, you're going to get some lessons about PR from the master here today. It's a great show. All that and more coming up right now.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to episode 59 of the Grow the Dream Show.
59.
Are you going to do Josh's jingle?
I am not doing Josh's jingle.
It's been a while since we've had a show where Josh wasn't with us.
It was.
And this might be the first time we've had a show without Josh where we've had no guest.
I believe it is. This is the first time it's just mano a mano.
Just you and me.
Just yeah. You and me, and I'm not singing that either.
Thank you. episode 59. Last week was a lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed our guest, Sujan Patel.
Yeah, me too. Got a lot of good response from it, too. Had people definitely taking notes on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like re-listening to it.
I remember one of our listeners, Sayla Constantino, tweeted back and said, okay, that was great. Now I have to go listen to it again with a notepad.
Exactly.
So yeah.
I understand.
I was editing the show and just putting together. We don't actually do editing of the content, but when you just assemble all the pieces and turn it into an actual podcast, I listened to it over and over as a result. So I absorbed quite a bit, but I actually still want to go back and take some notes myself.
I know it. Really, the last 2 weeks, I feel like, have just been home runs for us. And we had Death Wish Coffee before that.
What a great story.
It was. I've had a number of people that contacted me, either actually personally or on Facebook, because they'd watched it.
Yeah. So if you've been missing Grow the Dream Show, go back and catch a couple of those. There's some fun ones.
There's a lot of meat in those, and it's very entertaining to get down to. So it's like tasty meat.
It is. Yeah, that's true. I like that. Yeah. I like that analogy a lot. This is a show where we talk about everything to do with growing your business. We call it Grow the Dream because we believe every entrepreneur, every business owner, behind every business, there's a dream. And we want to do what we can to help you support that. So we're excited about that. Next week, speaking of guests, next week we are going to have a very special guest I'm excited about, Howard Partridge, published author, got some really great books out there. I would call them phenomenal books, actually.
Boom, boom.
There's a joke in there. But anyway, Howard is the exclusive coach for the Ziegler organization for small businesses. So if you found yourself at a Ziegler event and learned about coaching that they offer, or if you happen to contact them or whatever, that you would find yourself at some point hearing from Howard Partridge. He's a phenomenal guy. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about next week's show because we're going to talk about some business issues that relate to growing your business that may not directly have to do with marketing, because let's face it, we deal with a lot of stuff.
We do. And we're heavy on the marketing, but there's an awful lot of elements that are related to growing your business that aren't marketing.
That's true. But I'm going to see if we can get Howard to talk about something he does that is totally offline for marketing, that is one of the most genius plans I have ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
It's going to be a good show.
Nice tease.
Thank you. So this week is exciting. Rod, we publish the show on Monday, so it's Marketing Monday, or Marketing Mondays, as we sometimes call it. But today is unique because there are two things happening. Today is the day, if you're listening on Monday, of Apple's big event. And tomorrow, Tuesday, is the day of Apple's big trial.
Right.
So it was rumored, I don't know if you knew this, but it was rumored that the big Apple event, and I'm not, there's some rumors floating around about what they're announcing today. So I don't know what all that's going to be. I'm sure that the fanboys and girls will be excited about whatever it is.
Whatever it is. They're excited long before it even gets launched.
It's true. But this event was originally going to happen last week, from what I understood. But they moved it to today, Monday, on the eve of the trial. So
Well, that can't be coincidental, can it?
That's kind of my suspicion. I feel like this is one big public relations battle.
Absolutely. And Apple is excellent at public relations. I mean, they really are.
You know, I believe that's true. I believe they are. But there is an article in Quartz that came out a few days ago, which is a pretty interesting opinion piece that basically makes the case that Apple's not the only PR genius involved in this story.
Really?
Yeah. And so they're basically saying the FBI has a giant ulterior motive in its fight against Apple. You know, I spotted some comments from Edward Snowden. He was appearing via video feed at an event, and he spoke out pretty boldly about the FBI in this particular case. And he
not real surprising.
Yeah, of course. He basically makes the point that Apple that for the FBI to insinuate that they do not have the ability to break into this phone is absolute bunk. And he suggests that the whole case is formulated basically on one big lie.
Really? And so the reason that Apple would not reveal that because it would also reveal then that their phones are hackable?
No, I mean, I think...
I mean, otherwise, why wouldn't Apple just out the FBI?
Well, good question. So Tim Cook has been interviewed by Time Magazine, and the interview is being published, I think, next week in Time. But a couple of media outlets got their hands on it recently. So The Guardian ran a story, and as did Huffington Post, the tech editor from Huffington Post. And he basically says that they were cooperating and the FBI just took the opportunity to stab him in the back. And so there's a couple of interesting comments in there. He said, we were helping. We were consulting with investigators in addition to passing the information we had on the phone, which was all the information that we had. Some more time passed and they started talking to us about how they might sue or they might put a claim on it, but they never told us whether they were going to do it or not. By then, it's 75 days or so from the attack.
Wow.
I think most people here felt like it wouldn't occur, and I felt that like it would like, that if it would occur, I would get a call. That didn't happen. We found out about it actually from the press, who were being briefed about it in advance of the filing. That means they elected to not file it under seal in order to get the visibility on it, and I guess, and try to swing the public, and decided not to reach out on it. So,
and the reason they wouldn't reach out on it is because if you're the first out with it, you're the ones to get the... put the first initial imprint on it.
As you know.
Right, exactly. And that's important because you get the initial spin and then it looks like everybody else is responding and trying to spin.
So this tells me a couple of things. It tells me, for one, that...
Now, we're assuming that this is true. This is only half the story.
Of course. And this is, as we've already said, a trial that's being played out in the court of public opinion. Right. But if in fact, what Apple CEO Tim Cook is saying is true, then... And by the way, I kind of suspect that it is, but you know, none of us really knows.
We don't. We don't. We both have a bias towards Apple on this particular issue.
Or you may have a bias towards Apple.
Apple in regarding the Constitution.
My bias is against the FBI on this one. So at the end, it's the same bias, but for maybe slightly different reasons. But if what he's saying is true, then I wonder how many of these cases have been filed under seal that we don't know about. And this has long been my contention, is that if the FBI could successfully force Apple via court order, however, to create whatever software they end up having to create, then we'll never know when the FISA court demands that Apple give it up.
Right, because actually the worst precedent, maybe more than the software and the backdoor that's created, is, and I think it's been discussed a fair amount, even by us.
Yeah.
The worst precedent is that you have a legal precedent for the FBI to do this all the time.
Exactly.
For all companies, and not even tech companies, all companies to bend to the will of an invisible, unaccountable FISA court.
And never be able to talk about it. And that's a concern. So the court story basically says, look, the FBI doesn't care about this phone at all. This is just strategic litigation and strategic public opinion work on their part, because their fear down the road is that there will come a day when they can't break in, and that will cause their intelligence to go dark. Right. And so that's what the Quartz article maintains.
And you know, part of where there I think there's real evidence of the truth of that is when you're talking about, you know, that their line of investigation could go dark is that this happened. How many weeks did you say after San Bernardino?
It was like 75 days after.
75 days after, so 2.5 months after San Bernardino when they elected to do this. So clearly that had all gone cold already.
Well, the terrorist is dead. You can't convict him.
Right. And so, and that's not what they're looking for. But they're looking for his contacts, you know, whatever other elements might be out there.
Sure.
But when once it's clearly known that the phone is in FBI hands, et cetera, all of that's been long severed. Everybody's moved on. There's new identities. There's everything else that they need to do. That is long a cold trail. So this is not about San Bernardino. I mean, we know that. So that, to me, that's what adds some legitimacy to what Cook is saying here.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. And obviously, you know, by the time this episode is airing and by the time you hear this episode or watch this episode, we might know a lot more. Trial is on Tuesday. There is a story. I think it was Forbes that ran a story about how to get tickets for the trial, which is kind of interesting. It's at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, March 22nd. Apparently, according to Fortune, if you want to get in, you need to get there early. Tickets are available. Can you imagine tickets to a trial?
No, I mean, I've never actually heard of that.
I mean, I've covered, I haven't either.
I covered the courts as a reporter before and never occurred to me that there'd be tickets. It was always first come, first serve. If it was a high-profile trial, it was whoever got there first gets in.
Yeah. So the U.S. Magistrate Judge Sherry Pym, I think is how you pronounce it, P-Y-M. She published a memo explaining exactly how many people will get to watch and how. And that memo includes a restriction. There will be no live stream or any media updates from the courtroom.
Really?
So we won't know until it's over.
No social media, huh?
Apparently. I don't know how they enforce that. There are only 36 tickets for the courtroom. Tickets.
Yeah, no, 36 sounds right. The courtrooms like that are almost always very small.
So Apple and the Justice Department each get an additional 9 tickets to hand out.
They're going to pack the courtroom? I mean, to hand out?
Only 9. Yeah, only 9. There are each.
This is sounding more weird all
the time. There are overflow courtrooms where additional spectators can watch on a monitor. So a total of 324 spectators.
So pretty much the same as if you're going to a political rally or a rock concert.
Exactly.
You have your overflow space there where you can watch it.
Yep. 1 ticket per person. So if you're going to go get in line for this, you can't pick up any tickets for your buddies. Is this crazy or what? I mean, it's already
wild.
A circus, and it hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of things turning into circuses lately.
Yeah. Okay, so, I get the sense that all of us have heard enough about the Apple story. We can move on from there. We can talk about some of the other, what's the plural of circus?
Circi.
I'm the Latin guy. I should know, right?
You really should.
But Kirche, I think, would be how you pronounce it. Yeah.
Well, Kirche is church in German.
Well, yeah. Maybe there's a circus. Anyway.
But a boom.
Yeah. It's also the Scottish Kirk, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sure we'll learn more. I guess the point is, you know, whether we are Apple fans or FBI fans in this thing or whatever.
I'm a constitutional fan. That's where I was actually trying to go there.
Very good. And I am as well. And I ultimately, at the end of the day, I think we all want a secure nation.
Right.
And we want to fight terrorism, and that's all fine. At the same time, I think we all know that government has to have limits. And I think your point about business owners, look, where will this go if we allow this thing to become law because of case law, legislation from the bench, as it were? If we allow this to happen, what is it that we are perpetrating against our future selves and generations to come if we allow the government to have free,
We're trading liberties for safety, and we'll end up with neither. I mean, I know that's the big picture view of it, but every time you make that trade, there's no way that you can allow government to have a little bit more power in any realm without giving up a little liberty. Now, we all agree there's certain areas where that's an acceptable trade-off. But I mean, I think we should always be cognizant of the reality that it is always a trade-off. You're always doing that. And in this one, it's a very big step. So in a loss of liberty, therefore, that would be a very big trade-off.
And it's convenient that the FBI is taking on one of the companies that has potentially, I think, if my information is up to date, the most cash on hand of any company in the history of the world,
right.
not only right now.
Do they have more cash on hand than Google?
I believe so.
Oh, right.
But the reason I bring that up is one of the things we haven't thought about, or maybe we have, one of the things we should think about is the cost of complying with this if it were to be permitted to continue. because Apple's going to have to devote engineering talent, spend money, hire people, or else repurpose people.
Right. So the point is that won't be a problem for Apple.
This argument may not have a lot of weight in this case.
But this case isn't really nearly the issue as much as other cases coming down the road. And so if you have a smaller company, you have a company that's not cash rich, that's, you know, on the bubble and all, and this arises before them, they'll just cave.
So let's talk,
particularly if there's a precedent set.
Well, let's talk about a future scenario that has nothing to do with security, but upon which this precedent, if it is allowed to become one, could have an impact, right? So let's say you're a home builder and the government comes along and says, okay, we want you to build an extra house because we're going to put an FBI agent in this neighborhood.
Yeah, because we have suspicions about this neighborhood harboring a terrorist, maybe.
Okay, so whatever it is, but the government just says, oh, and by the way, we can order you to do this because remember that time that the FBI ordered, via court, ordered Apple to create a new department within their company to engineer their way around their own system? And so that's my point, is at what point do we as business owners and as business people find ourselves staring down some new thing invented by a government agency that forces us to spend money and put our efforts in some direction that we would not have done otherwise? Scary stuff.
This point.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. So anyway, enough about the Apple case. I think we'll see where that goes.
We don't need to do another show on it.
No, we don't. We did. And by the way, if you still want to explore those issues, you can look back a few episodes ago, and we spent an entire episode of the show talking about some of these legal ramifications. And so I don't think we're repeating ourselves today very much, but it's worth spending some time on if you're still uneducated. I'm sure that many of us are educated at this point,
right?
Because we've heard about it so much.
Right.
One other news item that I think we should jump into. Google Analytics is now supporting AMP. So this is kind of just a big leap in another direction. But AMP is as you know, if you've been listening to our show, Accelerated Mobile Pages is an initiative that Google put together. They're in the lead on this, but it is an open source project. It allows you to create some new markup on your website that makes mobile content available more quickly for your users. And this is now available. There was an announcement a couple of months back from Google, but it is now showing up in analytics. So this allows you to see data about how people use your AMP pages. So if you don't yet have AMP support...
Can you give a specific of that?
Yeah, sure. And so one of the things that we're trying to understand with AMP is how does it affect how does it affect your traffic? So if your pages are loading faster, Google has said those pages will rank better, all things being equal, against your competitor. If your pages are loading faster, AMP is one way in which that happens. We've started to see the AMP carousel. I don't have a phone in front of me, but the AMP carousel show up in the results. So if you run a Google search from a mobile device, from a mobile browser, you will see a new carousel of results that you can kind of swipe through.
Okay.
And those are AMP pages. And so ironically, as much as Google has said we're being very open about this, in other words, no matter which way you make your site faster, you're going to have a better showing in the search results.
Okay.
In reality, AMP has its own place. So we need to support AMP. If you're a business owner and you even remotely think that you're going to have mobile traffic to your site, which I think is all of us.
I should hope so.
I can't imagine anybody not getting mobile traffic to your site. Then you want to consider this because it's a new way in which Google results are being personalized for people. If you're on a mobile browser, you're going to get different stuff.
Excellent.
So there is a component in analytics now that allows you to record page views, events, and even custom dimensions. So I believe that those custom dimensions include things like events. We said events, didn't we? So that what that means is that you can trigger a specific measurement, an opt-in. For example, if somebody signs up for your email list, you can fire an event in Google Analytics. That will get measured. So you can track conversion rates and all sorts of other fun stuff as a result. So it's important because as soon as we go in the AMP direction, we start marking up our content differently, then a lot of our metrics go out the window. And so this is basically Google saying, if you're using Google Analytics, then you're still going to have the ability to track your conversion rates and all sorts of other fun stuff in there, which is important. And there is support for other analytics as well. In fact, that's one of the big dimensions of AMP, is that they support multiple types of of analytics systems in there with a single piece of code. So that's nice.
It is.
Yeah. So we'll see where all that goes. That's fun stuff. So we have a story this week, though, that you found that has to do with social media.
Right. So I'm just, going through our typical things here. And, when we keep track of everything that's going on in our industries, right? In our respective industries. So interesting story I came across, and I would just sort of tease it to the listeners this way, is that did you know that you can violate labor laws with your social media policy? So that,
speaking of government regulations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that would be a different road than I was thinking of going down.
Right.
This conversation. But yes. And basically, Chipotle, who has already been, enduring a buttload of bad PR. Yes, I did that.
Cleverly
I just
chosen.
Did that.
Is that in Josh's honor?
Yes. Well, and I was just, yeah, okay. So, with the Novavirus and other, problems they've been having at a number of places, it's hard to see how they even will survive this PR mess. But if they do, it'll be a great story.
You know what? I've been since this Novavirus thing came out. Of course, if you're not aware, Chipotle, I don't know how you couldn't be aware.
How could you not be aware?
Chipotle obviously has had some bad
experiences. Our listeners would be aware.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. Anyway, I go, because that's the kind of guy I am, I will go to support a business like this. So I've been to Chipotle since the E. coli and all this other crap, and they were busy. Sorry.
Sorry.
Pun fully intended. And they were slammed.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to say it. There's still an awful lot of people in the world that actually aren't connected to useful information. They might be connected to Kim Kardashian and, et cetera, but to actual useful information, not so much.
So you're saying the reason that I found that Chipotle was slammed was just because that the Kardashian Instagram followers weren't aware?
Yes. They were all in line right there.
Of the risks.
Yeah, see, I'm less apt to support a company that's having those sorts of issues than one that's under fire from, government regulations.
Fair enough. Okay, so, and I just had an opportunity to support Apple, and I bought a Samsung Galaxy S7 instead, so.
Yeah, so there goes. That, you just shot that out of heck, didn't you?
Sorry.
So anyway, so basically Chipotle now coming off of enduring their ongoing, public relations disaster. They fired an employee because he violated policy by tweeting out disparaging remarks about the company. But a judge has ruled that in doing so, they violated labor laws, labor laws.
So we should point out the guy tweets a bunch of times, apparently, 38-year-old guy.
He's a 38. Well, maybe I shouldn't go too far down that road, but he's a 38-year-old guy and he's working at Chipotle. Yeah. So he's made a few life decisions along the way.
Maybe it's part time because he's,
maybe so, whatever.
Maybe he's on a Dave Ramsey debt reduction plan and this is his pizza job, right?
Right. So you're right. He repeatedly criticized Chipotle on Twitter. And one of them was Chipotle tweets, "Nothing is free, only cheap labor. Crew members make only $8.50 an hour. How much is that steak bowl really?" And he did a whole bunch of these things. Well, apparently a co-manager or a manager there said, "Hey, you need to not do that because that's violating our policy." So he takes down the tweets, but it was too late. He was let go.
Woo!
He was fired for it. And it turns out, though, that I'm sure he signed this employee policy thing, probably without reading it.
Probably.
Yep. But
he probably checked a box on the online application, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. And in which it said that Chipotle employees can't do that. So basically, he agreed not to do that. However, he might be a 38-year-old working at Chipotle, but he's got something going on because what he did was he was represented by the Pennsylvania Workers Organizing Committee.
Oh.
Right.
Okay, so I knew that he had sued for back wages.
And this is who sued on his behalf.
I did not know. So there's a labor union involved.
I don't know exactly what they are, except that they're well-funded. But when it says Workers Organizing Committee, I'm thinking that's a half a step from communism.
I was going to say Karl Marx founded Philadelphia at one point, right?
Exactly. I mean, I'm seeing a fist in the air there. but they saw it as a win-win because of course, one of their big deals is the fast food employees' wages, the fight for $15. So they see they saw this as an opportunity to do that, but also to bring it to light of the National Labor Relations Board.
So they're shopping for a case just like the FBI was shopping for a case to sue a tech company over.
Right. One found Apple and one found a 38-year-old behind the desk at Chipotle.
Wow.
Fired 38-year-old.
So he's fired for his tweets.
Right. So they
I mean, what did you expect though, really?
Right.
I mean, to policy or not.
You're working for a company.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to be like customer service, et cetera. And then you get online and you start trashing your company, I mean, what would you expect?
I'm just serious. Common sense. And then after he's fired, apparently he's trying to get employees to sign a petition. No, that was while he was still working.
That was part of it too. I mean, so he's basically creating a little uprising at the company, and oddly enough, the company frowned upon that. Can you imagine?
He does sound, the more we talk about him, the more he sounds like a communist.
He almost sounds like a plant, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
I just doubt it. But, you know, if you were a really suspicious, conspiratorial person, you'd think that. The bottom line here, though, is that what the administrative judge ruled on is that not so much what he did, but that Chipotle's policies violated federal labor laws. So their policy saying you can't tweet out about this stuff violates federal labor laws. And that actually opens the barn door, which is part of the reason why the workers committee wanted to be involved.
So what possible element of national federal labor laws
does
this violate? I don't that's part of what I don't get about this case.
Right.
Are they saying that your constitutional right to free speech extends to the workplace?
If he wasn't in the workplace when he was tweeting it. So my guess is it's got to be a First Amendment type thing. So when I'm first kind of looking through this, I mean, I had mixed feelings about it because it strikes me as sort of a setup by a loser sort of thing. However, on the bigger picture, it does suggest that what Chipotle was trying to do was to sort of limit his freedom of speech. Now, I think that's perfectly acceptable when you're wearing the company uniform and et cetera. However, once you're on your own time, I don't know that they can do that by policy. However, if I'm an employee, I would never do that because, a savvy company with a savvy manager would just let me go.
You got to know you're getting fired when you do this.
Right. I would never say it was because you badmouthed us. You wouldn't have to give that reason.
You just don't work here anymore. welcome to unemployment because you don't work here anymore.
So this is something that probably I think that a lot of companies ought to be considering. They really should look into this. The law, the ruling was James Kennedy versus Chipotle, and we will link to this story out of Adweek.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is because it sets a precedent now. This is possible. Chipotle will appeal it. This story doesn't say.
I sure hope so.
Because I'd really like a much higher court ruling on this than some yokel outside of Philadelphia.
And being in their weakened condition at the moment because of their difficulties that happened that had nothing to do with this case.
Hey, maybe the ACLU will help them out because the ACLU is all about the First Amendment.
I would hope. Well, who's the ACLU going to help out though?
Well, theoretically, they should be on the side of freedom of expression.
So wouldn't that mean supporting the employee?
I guess it would.
I mean, that's what I'm trying to understand. Yeah. My hope is, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm a First Amendment fan, as you
right.
are.
Right.
So I certainly believe in that. But at the same time, I think that this comes down to a question of if you run a business and you have someone working for you who is working against you, do you have the right to let them go?
Right.
I mean, they're not helping if they're out there trashing you.
Right. Right. Let's put it in another realm. If you have an employee and your company has a policy in favor of, no, your company has a position in favor of policy A.
Okay.
And you have an employee that is in favor of policy Z. Now, when he's off the clock, he's out there working like crazy for policy Z. So that's working against the company's interests in the company's opinion.
Okay.
Do you have a right to fire him for that?
I guess maybe it depends on what actions he's taking outside. Like, in other words,
well,
okay.
If he's not naming the company, he's just working for policy Z.
Fine. Then, okay, so he's just fighting for better minimum wage.
Sure.
A higher minimum wage, let's say.
Higher minimum wage.
Then, of course, I mean, wear yourself out, buddy.
Now, if he's protesting the higher minimum wage outside of the Chipotle's where he works.
Holding a sign.
Right. That's a whole different issue then.
Right. Especially if he's still got his uniform on.
Well, that's a real problem then.
So I guess maybe we definitely get into an interesting gray area here. Like, what the personal right to freedom of expression in whatever medium, whether it's social media, online, or whether it's in the privacy of the man's own home. I mean,
it is. But the point is that they ruled on the company policy. So, any of our listeners probably should review their company's policy, even take it upstairs if they need to say, hey, let's make sure that we are in line with things here and pay attention to this case and any appeals of this case.
Interesting. So this isn't even a ruling on them firing him.
Right.
This is a ruling on the existence of a social media policy that they claim violates the law.
Right. However, the ruling did include him getting back pay.
Interesting. Well, right. Because that's a natural consequence of the policy.
Absolutely.
They fired him in accordance with the policy.
So because it's a policy, it's not, if it was just him, it wouldn't be near that relevant to all of us. But because it's against the company's policy itself, which I suspect is a very common policy among companies.
I would hope so. I mean, I would think so.
I would think so. But they're going to have to pay attention to that and to see if they need to. And so, you know, what this also suggests is that all of us who use social media on behalf of our companies or on behalf of clients and all really need to be careful about what we're doing, because social media is every bit as subject to the laws of the land as something that's written in your local newspaper.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. And if you're tweeting out for a client and it's under their company Twitter account and all, you know, be cautious. Make sure not just that you're doing good marketing for them, but be careful that you're not crossing any lines that is going to run afoul for the company with any labor laws, any federal laws.
I tell you what, this is a very concerning development. But I got to say, this Kennedy guy does not sound like the most brilliant dude on the planet, because this story says that he was happy with the result, stating that he's willing to accept his back wages in the form of food vouchers, as he still believes Chipotle's food is delicious.
Okay, I don't even know what to do with that.
So, he's not taking his back wages in cash. He wants them in burritos.
He wants them in burritos. oh, man.
If they planted this guy, they might not have chosen the brightest bulb.
if they are going to double all of the workers' wages there, then he's only going to probably get half the number of burritos that he would.
Well, and the cost, oh, man. And so the cost, because it's back wages, it's not future wages. So it's not lost wages in the future, in other words. Like, right. So it's only historic. He's apparently moved on to another job. He's working for American Airlines now. So be ready for him to sue American Airlines over something. But my question is, that's enough about that story. That's just yuck.
All right, so I wanted to transition from there too.
Okay,
because I have a transition.
Okay,
all right,
let's take it.
So the transition is clearly Chipotle's having problems with their reputation, right? I mean, like on every front now, they're under fire in their reputation.
Yeah, their employees are out to get them, and the customers don't want to eat there because
they might die,
health concerns. Okay, there's that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's a reasonable concern.
I think so.
Unfortunately, we probably all take that risk whenever we eat.
Anywhere.
Maybe even at home. I don't know. But anyway, so Chipotle's got all of these public relations issues. They're taking a beating. It's killing them in every respect. It might ultimately even kill the company. And I was thinking about that, how often it is that a reputation, as soon as a reputation is damaged, the company or the individual, the personality, is deeply damaged. And we know the old saw that it's a whole lot easier to lose a reputation than to regain a good reputation.
Truly.
And one of the examples I thought just briefly was like Marco Rubio, who, you know, a lot of people, whether you agree with his politics or not, respected him as a person, as a father and a husband, great backstory, and growing up poor, da-da-da-da. He was not known to have any real corruption to speak of. One little thing in Florida turned out not to be anything. But, you know, he's a pretty clean guy, pretty up, you know, standing, well-respected sort of guy. And then he could not gain any traction in the polls. And, of course, we all know about the Trump phenomena and what all was happening there. And there was a debate at which he completely lowered himself to the Trump level and went, you know, middle school on him.
Yeah, it seemed like he teamed up a little bit with Cruz.
He did, but Cruz didn't do the language.
Cruz kind of kept the rhetoric a little bit more elevated.
They were both attacking
him,
but Rubio attacked him in the way that Trump attacks people. Very sort of childish, petulant, immature. And the problem for Rubio, I think, is that it damaged his brand, the Marco Rubio brand, which up until then was probably, even though he was clearly going to lose this election, had a lot of future in front of him. I think he's going to have to work pretty hard to regain that brand and that reputation, and just like Chipotle could. And I'm just bringing that up because reputations are so important to maintain. It's far better to maintain a reputation and a good brand name than it is to have to try and regain it.
Do you think Rubio has a future in politics at all?
Yes.
I mean, because I understood, I don't know how true this is, but I heard it. I haven't seen it, you know, for myself. But I was in a conversation this morning. Someone said that he's dropped out completely, not just of the race for president, but that he's announced that he's going back to private life.
Yes. that is exactly what he's announced. That's exactly what he should announce. I don't want to see him, somebody like that, you know, immediately turn around and run for governor of Florida and announce his run right now, because basically everybody's burned out right now.
So what about the Senate race in Florida? Because isn't his Senate seat coming up?
Right. No. Right. It is, but I wouldn't want to see him do that either.
Is it this year?
Yes.
Okay, so he would have had to have been simultaneously running for Senate and president,
right,
if he wanted to.
Right, which you can do.
Right.
I think
smart use of your funds.
Well, and I don't think it's because Rand Paul was doing it, because he's up this year too.
Pretty much knew he wasn't going to win the presidency, I think.
Right. And so he dropped out to run for a Senate seat. But with Rubio, I mean, you need to just wait a while. You need to give the public rest. But I mean, man's only early 40s.
Right.
And there's an awful lot that's attractive about him. I think he still has a political future. It might never be the White House, who knows, but I think he still has a political future, probably in Florida.
Interesting. Well, I was a little surprised to see how badly he got demolished in the Florida primary.
I was surprised too, except I would say I was surprised, except that in this cycle, nothing surprising.
You're right. There's not a whole lot surprising. But I think it's probably proof that what you're saying is true, that his brand was tarnished by, maybe you call it middle school, maybe it's more third grade rhetoric, like, you know, everything else Trump does. You know, I don't know how far Rubio actually stooped.
Right.
But, I guess, you know, and that's one of the things we have to pay attention to in business, right?
It was quite stooping.
Was it?
Okay. It was quite stupid. Yeah, but you're right. Go ahead. That's the purpose of it.
Ironically, so your transition was out of a social media story, right? Does the social media policy violate a labor law? In fact, one of the places that I see businesses really do this when they get down in the mud is responding to negative reviews.
Mm.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen a business that otherwise has a fantastic reputation. And look, I get it. If you see a negative review on your Facebook page or on Yelp or someplace, it can be very hard.
I'm sure it's painful
to not respond.
Right, particularly if you believe it's totally unfair.
Right, and a lot of times it is.
But I'm sorry, you have a point, but I think that there's a perfectly appropriate way to respond.
I do. I agree too, but it's so tempting, and a lot of times, because it feels personal, especially if you own the business, and this happened recently, one of our clients that we manage social media for, we found a negative review on their Facebook page, and we went back to them, and we talked, and of course, you know, we don't know the details of the situation, but from what we understand, the customer who was disgruntled posted this negative review, out and out lied. I mean, granted, we're getting our information from our client who owns the business, but
certainly that's going to happen.
This client of ours has a great deal of integrity. We've got no reason to disbelieve him. And until we spoke to him, we had no reason to disbelieve the customer. I mean, bad things happen sometimes. You make mistakes or whatever. But this customer apparently just flat out lied. So what do you do, right? And I do believe there is a right way to respond. But when you stoop, as Rubio did, to the level of whoever it is that's the lowest common denominator in the conversation.
What, is he going to remain nameless now?
Who, Trump? Oh, no, I mean, hopefully Trump doesn't leave a negative review for your business, right?
Oh my gosh.
Although that would be very newsworthy and probably be pretty good for your business if it happened,
Ouch.
But unfortunately, and I've seen it happen so many times. Thankfully, our client did not. So in this particular case, there was no response from the client, and that was probably smart. Sometimes a response is in order, and I have of the opinion, like you, that there is a right way to respond.
I'm a fan of humor. If you can poke a little bit of fun at it, not take a shot at the person with humor, not that sort of thing, just poke a little bit of fun at it, find the right way to sort of totally undercut that. I'm a fan of that. Now, you know, if you're talking like a tweet or something like that, even a post maybe on your Facebook page, you can have a little bit of fun with it. I'm kind of a fan of that. I think that there's real value in that. I think that that can undermine an awful lot of tension and negativity.
It's tricky sometimes to actually convey humor in print. And of course, you know this as a journalist, right? Sometimes people completely misunderstand what
you
mean.
You can't emphasize the words you want to emphasize.
Yeah. Now, with social media, now we can answer with a GIF, or we can answer with a funny cartoon. There are ways to make sure the humor, or a video even, you can make sure the humor comes across.
Right. So, it's true. I mean, you actually, absolutely could. I mean, you could have the eyebrow raised, you know, gift, you know, that sort of thing. You could have just a cute kitty or something, you know. There's any number of things you could do rather than just go after the throat.
Right.
Which that would be the mistake, I think.
Hey, so Jay Bear has agreed to come back on our show. And when we had Jay.
Well, when were you going to tell me this?
I thought I'd surprise you on air. How's that? So we don't have him scheduled yet. So that's one of the reasons I haven't mentioned it yet, is because we don't actually have the date nailed down. But it's been about a year almost, if I recall, since he was on the show.
Right.
And at that time, he was working on a book, which he has since published. It just released here not long ago. It's called Hug Your Haters. And it's very much a whole set of strategies around customer service in the social media world. So it's a fun book, and I guarantee you he'll have an interesting insight or two to share with us about this very subject. So that'll be fun coming up. So all of this reminds me of this Talia Jane story. Now, this is about a month ago, so it's been out for a little while. But when you talk about the Chipotle employee tweeting and then getting fired, it reminded me of this 28-year-old. So she's a millennial. Now, Rod, you're a baby boomer. I am a Generation Xer. Our esteemed colleague who is globetrotting this week instead of joining us on the show is a millennial. So he's not here to defend his generation.
and this one, I don't think he would.
And I know that we have millennials who listen to the show, and we love you guys. We're so glad that you listen. But I got
to
tell you.
I got to believe most of the millennials listening that are listening
to our show
are going to have the same response that we do.
Yeah, I don't think they would see in any way possible where Talia Jane's response here makes sense. But I mean, you read the open. So here's what happens.
Gosh.
She's not making a lot of money. She's in customer service, and what does she have? An English lit degree?
English literature disease. I mean, she's made so many choices.
She's got an English lit degree, and I think she entered the world, as often happens out of college, thinking, you know, a lot of people want to hire me. I'm very, you know.
I'm a college graduate, darn it.
Exactly. So she goes to work for Yelp. If I recall the story correctly, she relocates from somewhere else to the Bay Area.
San Francisco, because it's so affordable for an English lit major.
Who's making, what, minimum wage? I think she's making minimum wage or pretty close to it as a Yelp customer service employee. And so she's not happy with her life because you know, she doesn't have a lot of financial margin in her life.
Right.
So she decides to publish a column on Medium.
Okay, so can we just point out how little financial margin? She spends 80% of her monthly income on rent. Now, I'm sorry, but anybody in that situation has to just take one split second to realize this is not tenable. This math doesn't work for a month. It just doesn't work. So you're either in the wrong city or you're doing the wrong job or both.
So I think most of us get that really your housing cost should not really exceed maybe 25%. I know on a mortgage application, they might let you slide all the way up to 30, 33%,
right. That's where they try and top it off at.
But even at that point, they know you're going to be struggling if you're spending that much on your housing cost. Now, apparently Talia did not get a roommate.
She could have split that there.
She could have cut that in half, and that would have dropped to 40%. I mean, that's a little higher than it should be. Higher than it should be, okay?
It is.
But 40% versus 80%, sorry, that's a big difference.
Well, it might almost be doable that way.
Almost. Except that, of course, she's got a lot of debt from college.
Because she even admits she immediately got out of college. She got a credit card. She got a car. She immediately, when she moved to the Bay Area, she slapped all of her expenses on the credit card. I mean, it's just one decision after another, after another, after another. And then this whole column is a woe is me, how hard it is. And for people like me who make stupid decisions, I guess. I don't know.
Now, she's got benefits.
She says how good her benefits are, how great the benefits are. Sometimes, I mean, she has to have a $20 copay at the doctor's office, which is
$20.
Seems great, unless that means that now you can't get to work for the next few days.
Oh, because her BART ticket, which is how she's Bay Area Rapid Transit for those that have never been in San Francisco, her BART ticket doesn't have enough money on it for her to get to work.
Right. But there's also benefits in that apparently they get free snacks. They have snacks loaded up there.
Oh, good. So at least her food part is taken care of.
So her food part's taken care of, except that in her column, she bemoans the tragedy of the customer service people at Yelp, because those snacks are only refreshed every twice a week. And there are people that go in and they just gather up tons of them because they don't have enough food to eat. So
apparently all of her coworkers are in the same situation.
All of her coworkers make a series of stupid decisions too to end up where they are.
So here's where this goes.
This is a judgment impaired person.
So here's where this goes.
I'm sorry. I should not use that phrase because it will end up being a government disability. They're judgment impaired.
And maybe you just violated a federal law.
Probably the ADA. Yeah, American Disability
Act. Oh, because she's
impaired. That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
yeah.
Rod, I mean, our podcast, you don't want our podcast
Forgive
to get taken
me, Mr.
down.
Forgive me, Mr. Federal Government, for I have erred.
So she was fired the day she posted this. I mean, the Yelp didn't wait long. I think it was like 3 hours, if I remember right. She was fired 3 hours later.
I wonder if they were monitoring her.
Well, when you name your CEO and you write the letter, an open letter to my CEO on Medium, and you say, Dear Jeremy... At the beginning.
Not even like, dear mister, not even respectful. Why didn't you just start with, yo, dude?
Yeah. So she got fired. Now, it is to be expected. But what's funny to me is how much attention this garnered. So Business Insider posted a story written by another millennial who pretty well trashed Talia Jane. For some of the reasons that you're saying, that you're pointing out, Rod,
that I'm laughing at,
yeah, that you're laughing
mocking.
At, but she does it as only a fellow cohort member could do, pointing out the expensive alcoholic beverages in the Instagram account of Talia Jane, so kind of citing the idea that perhaps some of that food money that you're complaining that you don't have might have gone to pay for expensive alcoholic beverages. So there's that, which could in fact be part of the same series of poor decisions that you're referring to.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's interesting to me because I think part of what we have to realize is that this isn't just, you know, a series of dumb decisions by somebody who paid way too much in rent and got a poor paying job. I also think there is a generational component here that we should perhaps be aware of. And it's easy to poke fun at millennials. So, you know, I don't want this to come across that way. But
right. And it should be stated that while I do that, I have a house full of millennials. I mean, I
you really do.
I mean, I have a bunch of offspring that are millennials.
But they understand you don't.
Not one of them falls anywhere near this category.
Right. They don't.
They would pass both of us in mocking.
Oh, good. Okay, so they don't put living expenses on credit cards and, you know, get jobs where they have to, you know, spend 80% of their income on rent or that sort of thing. Okay, so...
No, they're all right side up.
But there is sort of a common theme in some of the mindsets that we see in the millennial generation, which is a little bit of the sense that I'm owed some things.
Yeah.
Just because I'm here.
Right.
And so... I wonder sometimes how...
They got a participation trophy, therefore.
Exactly.
Right.
And really, it's our fault because we parented these people.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and I'm saying us, you know, I don't have a child who's a millennial. Mine is
the next one, whatever that is.
If the millennials are Generation Y, which was that was how I originally knew them.
She's a Z, huh?
She's a Z. You have maybe one or two that might be in the Z.
Yeah, I have a couple in the Z.
But you got the vast majority of yours. You know how many kids this guy has? The vast majority
of
you.
It's eight. We'll just out me and say it's eight.
The vast majority of your eight are millennials. But I think our generations, the boomers and the Xers that have parented these kids, didn't do them any favors.
Absolutely not. When you are teaching self-esteem to beings such as us that have plenty of self-esteem to start with, what we need to be taught is responsibility and consequences. But instead, we teach self-esteem and trophy participations and, you know, that sort of thing. We're not preparing these children at all for the real world. And so here's a perfect example for those of us that have been pulling our hair out saying, these kids are not going to be ready for the real world. Talia Jane is example A. She is totally unprepared for real life. Totally unprepared.
Apparently. And I think that's...
And so we mock her, but you're right. It backs up a generation.
It does.
More.
I think I think in a lot of ways, a lot of what we point at, we have these fingers pointing back at us because we set the world up this way with the participation trophies and all.
Right.
It's just not fair, you know, to set people up for disappointment. The real world rewards performance. The real world rewards people who take responsibility and who solve problems. And you don't solve problems by writing an open letter to your CEO on Medium about your own financial decisions that you made. I mean, she knew what the wage was when she took the job.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so it's...
And she had to know that San Francisco was uber expensive. There is no more expensive place, right?
Yeah.
It's the most expensive.
Yeah, it's true.
In the entire country. So, I mean, you have no ability to earn income at any level whatsoever beyond minimum wage to start with. And you start out in the most expensive city in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So, Jeremy Stoppelman, CEO of Yelp, responded on Twitter. and he responded the next day. He does claim that she was... not let go because of a Medium letter that was directed at him. He said he was also not involved personally in the decision. He said, we don't comment on personnel. Actually, he didn't say this. A Yelp spokesperson the following Monday said, we don't comment on personnel matters, which is probably smart.
Yeah. Now, that's a policy almost everybody has.
But he did. At least Jeremy Stoppelman said, you know, I read her column late last night. So he was saying well after she was let go was when he read it. And he wanted to acknowledge her point that the cost of living in San Francisco is far too high. Fair enough.
So I would love to explore the policies as to how it got so high, but that's not for now.
There are public policies that affected that. Saying. Absolutely. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And it's not the fault necessarily of the tech community, but I just can't imagine, I'm sure we have listeners in the Bay Area. I can't imagine what it's like to operate a business there.
Yeah.
You know, with the taxation policy.
You know, we've actually had, you know, to remind our listeners that we're based out of Sarasota, Florida, which is a low tax state. And while Sarasota itself is a fairly wealthy community, it's still cost of living and cost for doing business is quite low. We've had a lot of tech transfers in the last few years out of Silicon Valley and California in general to the Sarasota area.
Yeah.
And it's for competitive advantage. It's simple as that.
And this is what he says in his tweets. The reality of such a high Bay Area cost of living is entry-level jobs migrate to where costs of living are lower.
There you go.
And so they are moving the particular division that she was supporting, which is their Eat24 app, which is a food delivery app, apparently. Right. And she was pointing out the irony that the person working in the food delivery app support couldn't buy food, he said they're moving that division to Arizona for that reason. So Arizona, you know, right next door practically, and a tax-free state. I'm not tax-free, but I mean a much more tax-advantaged
right.
state from a business standpoint and
right.
and from a personal standpoint. So
did you notice her update at the end of the Medium article
about being fired at whatever time it was?
Yes,
and she wasn't surprised.
And then she also says my PayPal is paypal.me. Tell your Jane. She's begging for money at the end. Square Cash is cash me. Thank you so much for helping my story be heard and pay my bills because I make terribly stupid decisions.
Oh, and her profile says that she writes comedy. So...
See, so when I was reading this, I wondered if the whole thing was a parody, but obviously it wasn't. Alas, it wasn't.
Apparently it was not. So, interesting stuff. So, I guess one of the lessons here is, Rod, this is all PR. I mean, everything we've talked about today,
that's
from Apple
right.
to the FBI and their strategy.
Right, to Chipotle, to Yelp.
And this young employee. And apparently she was pretty well gainfully employed shortly hereafter, doing what I'm not sure that I recall. But it's interesting to find that she actually landed on her feet after, I think.
Well, a lot of publicity usually helps that, actually.
That's my point is, you know, look, if you're going to go out in a blaze of glory, I guess you should do it in as big a blaze of glory as possible.
I guess.
Because the stuff becomes newsworthy real fast.
Yep, absolutely.
Interesting stuff. So I'm fascinated by that. I'm also fascinated by some of the things that we have to do as business people. You know, what do you do, Rod, when you have a business that says, look, I need to get some publicity because, you know, some of the stuff I'm doing may or may not actually be working and I want to become more interesting. I mean, do you do something royally stupid? Is it time for the stunt? I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
you know, I am not a fan of the
I know.
Stunt.
That's why I'm setting you up this way.
Right. Right. No, I don't think so. I still think oftentimes in publicity, slow but steady wins the race. When you're talking about building your brand, building your credibility, building your reputation, you know, you don't want to screw up your reputation on rolling the dice on a stunt that may or may not work.
Yeah, but how can you? I mean, how can you position things in such a way? I mean, really, what do you do that causes a news organization to find something interesting? I mean, we've talked about this before on the show, but like, you know, what can you do? I mean, I like, let's say, for example, that you are in a professional practice made up of three professionals, four professionals, several of you. One of you takes a leadership role in a local organization, right? What do you do to? I mean, it's one of those situations where everybody knows that the leadership role was kind of nobody really wanted it,
right.
And you know,
right.
It's one of those,
the first one to volunteer for it got it,
or the first one to miss the vote,
right,
because nobody would agree to it. So like, you know, I mean, every reporter is going to see right through, you know, something like that. But at the same time, hey, they got named to a position, right? So is it newsworthy?
It probably is, depending on it. Yeah, it probably is. And here's why. And here's why you need to know how to work these things, because you can get in that particular example, both the person being appointed and the organization can get some publicity out of it. Now, if you're talking about just your old print newspaper, it's a lot less likely. However, all of these publications now have these daily e-blasts. They have well curated email lists, and they have a lot of advertising. These are good money makers for them, but they need to fill up those news slots every day on there. I've had a lot of clients that we've been able to get really things that traditionally would have been marginally newsworthy.
Okay.
We've been able to get into those email news blasts, and they get responses.
Do they really?
Yes, because those are well kept. And those are all opt-in ones. I mean, all the good ones are opt-ins. And I mean, we had one, it was probably 6-8 months ago now, that we got them just one shot in there, and they picked up two clients.
What?
Yes.
From an email blast?
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I feel like we really actually undercharged for that. But the point is that for what they got, they were
the
happy.
The Thompson Group's fees just went up.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. They were happy clients. But the point is, so in that respect, yeah, it's totally newsworthy, because newsworthy is a judgment call, but it's also a needs based. Remember how I talked before about how you had to fill in the gray matter and had to fill in the space between the ads and a print publication? Well, you have that same thing on an email blast, because those are all slotted out. You have the ads down the side, the ad on top, an ad in the middle. And if you look at all of your emails, you get almost all of those. Probably a lot of our listeners actually do these. They have X number of slots they need to fill. You know, it might be 5, it might be 8. Might be 10. They have different things. Some of those are people on the move, all those sorts of things. And those get read. I get them. I get half a dozen of those each day, and I read through all of those.
Interesting. So do you focus on the business? You know, obviously you said the individual, so there's the people on the move idea. Okay,
right.
Well, so-and-so, it's a professional advancement of some sort or some recognition perhaps by mm-hmm. colleagues. But is it the organization that should get some publicity, or is it the business that the professional works for?
So it's going to be both.
Okay.
It's going to be both, because if you put it in there, and if you're writing up a press release for it, you want to say that the local United Way has Bob Jones of the Bob Jones Law Firm
sure.
has been appointed vice secretary of the local United Way and da 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 da, and you put that out there. United Way gets a little plug for it. Bob Jones does, and Bob Jones Law Firm does. You have a link to both, United Way and Bob Jones Law Firm.
Sure.
And it's all good. And that's all earned. That's not a paid ad. All earned media there.
So
none of this is even getting to the point of actually getting something in a newspaper.
Right. It's
or
just
on
an
TV.
Email blast or whatever.
Just an email
and
blast.
A lot of these are duplicated online that there's like a link that you can later point to and say,
yes.
And potentially those links come back to your website. So you're getting links from an SEO standpoint, you're getting links from a publication back to your website.
Correct. And we urge every client that gets any kind like that to, if we're not handling their website, which we really don't very often, that's not really what we do a lot of, we urge them to always have a news or in the news,
section. Yeah.
And then put all of those on there, because the more of those have, if somebody's checking you out, one of the things they're going to check out is in the news and see what sort of coverage, what sort of legitimacy you have.
Who's published already about you, right?
Absolutely. And if you already have a bunch of third party, legitimizing of your company there through newspapers, through email blasts, through all sorts of different things, magazines and all, and they've done stories on you, then if somebody's looking to use your services or whatever it might be, they realize at least you're legitimate.
Interesting. As you guys know, we talked about Tongue Brush and my project that I have, and
right.
That video which we ran on the show here a few weeks ago, I don't even remember. It was a month ago, perhaps, that we ran the video on the show, has gone viral. So we've gotten the video cost down to less than 0.2 cents per view.
Wow.
And there are thousands of comments. And most of the time, the comments are simply somebody tagging their friend in it or whatever. So this thing is going crazy.
Yeah, good job.
And the sales are responding on Amazon. The thing has climbed up in the sales. But here was my point. I recently was in a meeting and you know, we've handled their stuff for several years now. So there's their website and there's, you know, various aspects of all of it. I just got a box. I mean, a big box full of periodicals that have featured this product in the past. And I mean, every kind of fashion magazine, men's magazine, women's magazine.
Really? And this is from your client. They had it.
They've had this box. And there's not a mention on the website. There's no.
That just
there's
hurts
not a,
me.
It's just a, and I'm like, where was this man? And now, granted, I knew a little bit about some of it. And so I asked him one time, give me a list of some of the publications. And they did. They sent it to me. And we were putting together a pitch for Walmart. And I put it into a pitch for Walmart. And,
right.
And it's my fault that it's not that stuff isn't on the website. But when I saw.
Yeah, I was going to say, if they just had a good web guy.
How heavy the box is.
Oh, my gosh.
And there's even these little books. I don't know. The PR firms do these little books. What do they call them? The little books where you have like, here's all your, you know, they it's a little book. They've got like three of them. And they're little books. It's like a little, like a photo album almost. But inside is.
I can't figure out what you're talking about.
A reduced size version of every story that ran.
Okay.
And it's kind of their proof of, here's our work that we did. Because they hired some big PR firm in New York, you know, Madison Avenue. Type thing eons ago,
right.
To work on this project. So a lot of the press is old. A lot of this earned media is old. But
it also shows they've been around.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going on the
website. Oh, my. Yeah. But see, I mean, you can, when you do that, so, I mean, if it's, I don't know what it was, but say, if you, as seen in the New York
exactly.
Times and
yeah.
Time Magazine and blah, blah,
17,
blah.
Vogue, you
right.
know.
As featured in.
This one, they have a periodical that covered them that I have never seen anybody promote that they've been covered in before. It's Gene Simmons' Tongue magazine.
Perfect. I did not know it existed, but
exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah, anyway, fun stuff. We'll talk about more strategies you can use to grow your business next time. This has been fun, Rod.
It's been a lot of fun.
I didn't know we were going to have a PR day today, but it's you know what? There's a lot to mine here. Good
there
stuff.
There is, and I'm kind of glad we did because I think that PR is getting overlooked some because we have so many shiny new objects. And the fact is, it still really works.
Especially if you can get it done effectively. So, hey, if you need a messaging or a PR strategist, I want to recommend my good friend Rod Thompson to you. You can find him on Twitter at Rod_Thompson. There is no P in Thompson.
There is no P.
You can find him on the web at thethompsongroup.com. So, good stuff.
And yourself, obviously, you know how to make things go viral now. You've solved it.
No.
Everybody wants to know, how do we do something go viral?
You use a
how
cat.
Do make it? You use
it's
a
all
cat.
About the cat.
Cat and bacon.
Drag the cat's
bacon
butt
and cats.
across the tongue and guarantee it. So, I don't have the secrets to that. But listen, we don't have our friend Josh Muccio today. So why don't you give Josh a shout out? If you're listening on Twitter, you can tweet him at Josh Muccio, JOSHMUCCIO. And you can let him know that you missed him today. He is in Italy.
Yes. Italiano.
So
very nice. And if you want to reach out to David, he's at the David Johnson on Twitter.
Yes. That is right. And if you've had any problems with our feed lately, it has to do with SSL. I don't know. We'll talk about that perhaps on another.
I can hardly wait.
Oh,
I just got a shiver
we'll
of excitement right there.
Nerd out about SSL. How's that?
Come back, Josh.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.